We're going to start off by talking about the Anti-Poverty Network and their recent summit, and I'll turn it over to you, Paz.
Yeah, well, yesterday at Clayton Wesley Uniting Church in the Parade, the Anti-Poverty Network held its People's Poverty Summit. It was a very long day, but we think a very inspiring and stimulating day, about 50 to 60 people coming together to add some detail to three key campaign areas that we've long wanted to build. One of them was our New Start campaign, which we've been very active on actually for a very, very long time, since the group formed in late 2013. And several weeks ago, we launched our It's Time campaign, which is calling on the Labour Party to finally publicly commit to raising New Start. So we had like a whole bunch of sessions where, you know, people were coming together and planning and strategizing around that campaign, giving it a sense of direction and a sense of focus. But we also had two other areas that we put a lot of time and energy into. One was job agencies, which are, of course, the organization that unemployed people spend most of their time interacting with, because Centrelink are largely hands-off nowadays, and when you're unemployed, it's largely the job agency that you're dealing with, and for most unemployed people, they're a source of tremendous frustration and hardship and stress, and we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, how we can organize to challenge how job agencies treat unemployed people. And the third area of focus was around public transport, and, you know, even for people on very low incomes who have access to concession fares, the cost of public transport is a huge barrier to people being able to participate in community and social life and to being able to be mobile. And so the day was really about, you know, our members who were, you know, all directly affected by poverty and unemployment in various ways, coming together and talking about like how they want to see these three campaigns develop and unfold over the coming months. And I think for us it was a pretty we were pretty overwhelmed by, you know, the quality of like ideas and the insights that came out of the discussions, and all the people who, you know, spoke in public for the first time, which is, you know, sort of one of our running themes is to give a voice to people who've largely been excluded from the media and from public life. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we all walked away feeling, you know, I'm pretty satisfied and pretty energized.
How are people feeling these days about the response of the political players, say, in Parliament, and also people in the broader political landscape? You've had some ex-politicians and some people in the business sector saying that New Start should go up. Can you contrast response of, I think John Howard said that it's probably too late, and I think a senior economist said it was too late, and contrast that with the politicians in both sides of politics?
Yeah, there's no doubt there's been a tremendous shift in public opinion. Several weeks ago, like a central media, the polling company released a survey showing that two-thirds of Australians support a raise to New Start. We've long felt that there's much more sympathy out there for the unemployed than many people realise, but even we were pleasantly surprised by that result. And, you know, you're quite right. You know, you've got major names in the business community the community sector and the union movement have long supported a raise to New Start. It's a no-brainer for them. But, yeah, you know, and we're now in the funny predicament where, you know, former Prime Minister John Howard has a better position on the dole than the current leader of the Labour Party, Bill Shorten, mm-hmm. and of course, I'm like infinitely better than the current leader of the coalition, Malcolm Turnbull, who of course, you know, over his dead body, is he ever going to give unemployed people more money? You know, they're trying to lower the rate of New Start at the moment by scrapping the clean energy supplement. So it's staggering stuff. And I think, you know, the arguments and the evidence are like pretty overwhelming. Also, you know, the level of grassroots activity, particularly here in Adelaide, you know, people, you know, like unemployed people and other welfare recipients and their supporters are organising and they're moving councils and churches and other community organisations in the right direction. It's very hard for people to ignore that. And I think sooner or later for the current political parties, for the current political leaders, things are going to come to a head. And at the Labour Party National Conference in December, you know, we're planning to have a very sizable presence outside. Because, you know, the Labour Party should have committed to a raise years ago. It's incredible that it hasn't already happened.
Yeah, and I guess the public support that has been shown most recently, that, you know, even pleasantly surprised the APNSA themselves. I think it's even more remarkable given what we know of, you know, the generations of, I guess, vilification and extreme bias from all parts of the media, the mainstream media. And yeah, so that was pleasantly surprising to see, actually. So there were, as I understand it, I wasn't actually there, Paz, but there were three major sessions, major policies that were, I guess, finalised or developed further yesterday. Can you talk a little bit about what those were?
Yeah, well, three major areas. You know, not the only areas that that a group like the Anti-Poverty Network should take an interest in, but, you know, like any grassroots group, you know, we sort of have to be careful not to spread ourselves too thin. So, yeah, you know, we had a series of workshops around the New Start campaign, and also a series of workshops around job agencies and unemployment and around public transport. And in some ways, actually, the public transport workshops were the most exciting because, you know, this is like an area where we've long wanted to have a campaign, you know, where we've recognised that there's a need for people to be speaking out about how hard it is for low-income people to get around. But we've never quite been able to get something off the ground, whereas New Start and job agencies have long been areas where we've been active, where we've, you know, had a public voice, where we've organised events and protests and other activities. And I think with a public transport campaign, you know, we all left those sessions with a sense of clarity about what a public transport campaign that prioritizes, you know, the interests of like ordinary people, what a campaign like that would look like. And the next step is actually like to get it off the ground and to get activity happening.
Mm. And speaking on that, I think that's probably a great segue into Brendan talking a little bit more about the workshop, because I think you're one of the people who...
Well, I think actually I kind of just ended up getting roped into the workshop on the day, but it was a really remarkable conversation. And we're very hopeful that the public transport campaign that we're initiating will be a very ambitious and engaging campaign that will kind of go beyond, in some ways, the APN's kind of traditional territory. But it starts with what is very much a core issue for us, which is the fact that it's very difficult for you know, people who are on New Start, who are on other very low payments, to actually to use public transport as it currently exists. On the seniors' pension, you get free travel in certain interpeak periods of the day. And that's something that we think should be extended to everyone who's on a concession. And it's also interesting, you know, these are sort of little nitty-gritty issues that where we started from. Like the little ways that the system as it stands doesn't quite make sense. For instance, like a healthcare card doesn't qualify you for a concession ticket. And that's something a lot of people don't know. And that's something that, you know, we've heard a lot of stories of people getting caught out and getting hundreds of dollars of fines because they weren't aware of that fact. You actually have to apply for a separate transport concession card. So we basically want there to be one concession card, and for that to be, you know, everyone who is qualified for a Centrelink payment, who is on a low income, from students to the disabled to seniors, all to get free travel for at least a period, for at least those interpeak periods. But then you look at that, and then you actually see how you start to think about how inequality is kind of, or hear stories, you know, sitting around the table with people that really do demonstrate inequality is kind of built into the structure of public transport, and that's something that has gotten visibly, sort of palpably worse as privatization has become a bigger ingredient in that system. So it's simple things like, you know, in the outer suburbs, in working class areas, in disadvantaged areas, there isn't the same kind of effective, frequent, and safe kind of travel as there is towards the city. The whole transport system kind of is moving in the wrong direction. It's not being directed towards access at the greatest areas of need. I mean, something that's probably one of the most common complaints for anyone who's trying to travel across the city to work multiple jobs or go to multiple appointments or to access vital services, you know, it's the central hub and spoke nature of the system. There's no interconnecting, well, there's one interconnecting bus or perhaps two, like the 300 Circle line, which is fairly inner city when you're talking about places like, Elizabeth or Noarlunga.
But I remember even as somebody who used to use that service, the O-Bahn service, every day, I mean, the common complaint from my friends and I who lived kind of in the northern suburbs who'd be using these services is how much of a marked difference there was. And I don't know if there's a lot of, substance to this, but this palpable difference in, I guess, the buses that were used. I mean, we didn't have air conditioning, most of those buses. They were the oldest, crappiest ones that were just about to be thrown out.
And that's right.
You know, if for some reason one of us had to catch a bus around Burnside or the eastern suburbs, it was just this remarkable difference in, you know, the beautiful new buses that they'd get, state-of-the-art.
Even though those buses are actually used less.
Yeah.
No, and that's actually right. And those older buses as well also don't have the same disability access as some of the newer ones do.
Yeah.
So we want full disability access for every single bus in South Australia. We think that ultimately the only way that we're going to do this is to build a campaign that works broadly across the community to develop an inspiring vision about, you know, public transport in South Australia, how it could be the best and most accessible and most equitable in the world. And ultimately, one envisages that that's going to require taking it back into public ownership, and also, in a sense, but also having, I guess, a kind of culture of public ownership, of this is something that we've won and built ourselves in a way. So it's definitely a long-term campaign. It's something that is structured strategically around, you know, a few basic demands to begin with, to make the concession system clearer and more fair. And then, but to use that as a launching point to build something that may go on for some time towards really answering some of those. And like you're saying, like the conversations that probably a lot of people have been having over the entire course of their lives, like, some of those inequities and, you know, clear kind of signs of class inequality, effectively. Yeah. So it's great to be a part of that, and we'll try to keep you informed as we continue to.
Yeah, and I guess we've talked about this before, but in terms of keeping up with, if you know, there's a listener who hasn't listened to us before talking about the APNSA, what is the best way to keep up with what you guys are doing and what the group's doing?
Well, first and foremost, you know, follow us on Facebook. The Anti-Poverty Network SA Facebook page is, you know, always full of, you know, like interested analysis and personal testimony and like information about upcoming events and projects. We also have a website currently undergoing a bit of construction and maintenance, but generally that's a good alternative to Facebook. And one of the things I've always loved about the Anti-Poverty Network is that, you know, we recognize precisely because it's hard for people to get around, particularly low-income people, that, you know, we can't expect everyone to come into the CBD for every single meeting. And so the organization has long been broken up into various suburban branches across Adelaide. So chances are, if you want to get involved, there's probably a branch relatively close to you. So get in touch if you want to learn more. We could always do with more volunteers. You know, there's always more worthwhile projects than there are people to run them. So, but we have a big second half of the year plan. And I mean, I really think that there's huge potential around a public transport campaign that perhaps that campaign is sort of a missing piece for us. And, you know, no organization could do everything, but my God, is there a powerful case for us finally getting active around public transport.
Yeah, and I guess it's really, really good to know that there's so many fantastic campaigns that are being prioritised. Obviously, you can't be spread too thin, but the campaigns that are being prioritised further to just, I guess, raising Newstart, because that's incredibly important, but at the same time, you know, having these other campaigns. So thank you so much, Pass and Brendan, unless there was anything more, and I guess everyone knows where to go now to yep. find out more and how to get involved.
Yeah, and you know, it's a good case of what a sort of democratic kind of yeah. the way that we do grassroots kind of democratic discussion, like everyone's ideas kind of get pulled in, you know, get listened, heard, and you know, and hopefully develop into something that you know, makes a concrete change. And, you know, yeah. I think we've done an excellent job of kind of coming out and defending unemployed workers, and have, you know, it's impossible to measure what kind of impact we as an organization have made, but there's no doubt that we've been, you know, a part of a sort of ecosystem of activists and organizations that really have, you know, as you said, like that kind of discourse of stigmatizing the unemployed and kind of making austerity politics work by demonizing that group, that, you know, welfare recipients, is just doesn't seem to be playing as well as it did previously. So,
yeah. There was this beautiful microcosm of current events happening in, when was the state politics forum that
I went to?
That was, of course, back in March. The APN held a fantastic event where they had, I think, 4 or 5 politicians from the local, I guess, political parties sitting there. They all did their, you know, they had their 5-minute spiel or whatever about their party and what they're doing to help people in poverty. And a lot of it was absolutely nothing, obviously, especially from the major parties. But the way that they had to, I guess, be in the same forum with actual unemployed people and people on low incomes and people on Newstart and people on welfare payments, and having to sit there and actually listen to testimonies, real testimonies from people who are suffering from these cruel, you know, punitive, I guess, systems and policies that we have in this country, and sort of just watching their faces, I think, was a really powerful kind of experience of, you know, just for the first time I've sort of experienced, I guess, these politicians sitting there and being told what the real term effects of these policies that they're all sort of contributing to, in a sense, are, and what they mean for people from their own mouths. It was, yeah, it was quite powerful.
And it's always very, like, instructive when we have these events from time to time where we've got politicians in the same room as our members, not so much because, you know, we all get the, you know, stock standard responses from the politicians, even from the somewhat better ones. But also, yeah. I'm like, for me, what I take away from that is the contrast between, you know, our members, you know, whether they be pensioners or carers or sole parents or job seekers, who, you know, speak about, you know, their understanding of, you know, how government policy affects their lives, and they speak with such directness and, like, honesty and insight and power. You know, that's a powerful thing. And then comparing that to, you know, the sort of, you know, the waffling and the and the mincing around of, you know, the people who are meant to be our leaders, but of course aren't our leaders. And, you know, like a point that came up yesterday at the People's Poverty Summit, I made it during a short speech I gave during our delicious dinner, is that, you know, the politicians are not the leaders. We ordinary people working from below, you know, I'm like, we're the ones who create change. When it finally happens, you know, the politicians take credit, and like history sort of like remembers the great leaders, but that's actually like a distorted view of like how change happens. It's a lot of, you know, people whose names won't be recorded, pushing and pushing and pushing and being largely like ignored. And, you know, then at some point they stop being ignored. Mm. And then at some point later on, they like eventually win. And when they win, you know, all the big people take credit. But yeah. Of course, you know, I think we all know better. And
that was their idea all along, and they didn't have to be fought.
Yeah. So then we finally get a raise to new start under Shorten. And I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, by the way. You know, we do have to keep pushing. Like when we finally get that raise, no doubt, you know, the Prime Minister and the Treasurer and the Social Services Minister, you know, will take credit for that, you know, historic raise, you know, probably the first raise to New Start in 25 years or 26 years. But, you know,
it's under our watch.
That's right. We'll like remember, you know, all the people who, you know, put hundreds, some cases, you know, thousands of hours of labor into shifting the community on this. Yeah, just something I reflected on, you know. And when I see politicians in the same room as our members, I always think about that.
Yeah, and I guess it's always important to note as well, you're doing all of this with almost no resources. It's sheer people power, which, you know, is fantastic in a lot of ways, but also, just goes to show how far it goes.
It's about time, I think, for a music break. So
excellent.
How about This Wheel's on Fire, a cover of a Bob Dylan song?
Thank you so much, Parson Brendan.
Thank you.
Thank you.